Hello, and welcome to Awards Daily's Water Cooler Podcast. I'm your host, Clarence Moy, and today I'm bringing you a very special interview with Emmy-nominated composer Hildur Guðnadóttir, whose original score to HBO's Chernobyl wasn't actually recorded with any instruments at all. In this fascinating interview, you'll find out how she did it and the life-risking chances she took to bring her art to the limited series. And be sure to look out for more Emmy nominee interviews throughout the month of August. And thank you very much, as always, for listening and subscribing to our podcast. Now, Awards Daily's Water Cooler Podcast presents Emmy nominee Hildur Guðnadóttir for HBO's Chernobyl. Thank you for talking to me.
Of course.
So you're in Germany?
I am, yes. I'm in Berlin.
Oh, nice. Are you working on a project or?
No.
Okay.
Nothing. I decided to take a bit of a break after this last year. It's been pretty full on, so I'm trying to recharge my creative juices.
I can imagine. So, you know, talking about Chernobyl, one of the most amazing things about the piece is your, and you know, the story behind it is your strive for authenticity on the score. You know, can you talk a little bit about how you achieved that authenticity? And, you know, I know that the story about going to the plant, where, you know, where that idea came from initially.
Yeah. I think it was when I read the script, it was really, it was just really clear to me that the story being told with this script was very honest, and it was very true to the events as they happened. And it was also very clear to me that the space and the power plant and the radiation played a really big invisible role, and I felt that the best way to portray that and to be honest about that and with that was to create that environment from the actual place itself. And so to kind of give the space a voice, and to make the space and the radiation almost like a character, like an invisible character. And to me, it was important to like really try to imagine what that felt like to in reality, like what the feeling of this invisible fear felt like, you know, and to me it felt kind of like suffocating and like, you know, very oppressive and heavy. Like it didn't feel like cool, you know, it just felt like intense and heavy. So that's kind of why I chose this route.
Yeah, so when you had the idea and you talked to Johan, the director, what was his reaction when you told him, I'm going to go into this plant, I'm going to record the sounds of the plant, this radioactive plant? What did he say? Did he give you free rein to do that, or did he have some concern? Or
No. I think everyone was really into the idea from the first mention of it. I think everyone was just really happy that I was, you know, willing to go out, like really out of my way to to make it happen, so everyone was really supportive of it, and I think that we were really in agreement the whole way through about like how to. I think everyone involved in the whole production were that, you know, everyone put so much work into it and so much heart, and there was not a single person in the whole production that did anything like, you know, half-heartedly or you know, flimsily. So I think that this was just like another aspect where it seemed clear that it had to be like, you know, some extra measures had to be taken to to really tell to, you know, to do it justice, because it's a bit tricky when you're telling a story that has affected so many lives of people that, you know, that are still with us, and you know, families that lost, so many families that have lost family members to this catastrophe. So it's something that's still so alive with so many people. So it's is something that you really want to respect.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So you've recorded the score in coordination with the filming and the plant, I think. Is that correct? Is that typical for you, or is this sort of a different way to approach? I mean, obviously it's a different way to approach recording a score, but you know, in terms of, you know, not having filmed material in advance, you know, is that typical for you, or is that a unique thing?
Well, it's definitely my preferred way of working, because I think I try to approach every project, you know, with kind of an open mind and carte blanche, and just like, you know, no preconceived ideas of what I want to do before like reading the script and really like getting into the story. But I think that the earlier you can start becoming a part of the process of, like, you know, just the world of the story that you're creating, and the pacing of it, and the sound of it, and the feel of it, the earlier you can start, the better for me, because then you can really do a whole world from the beginning together as a whole, you know. So often when you join, like when you start a project, like really late, you already have like a, you know, you have a tap score or somebody else's pacing that you haven't really been able to be a part of, that dialogue, you know, if you come in too late. So that's, it always feels like a bit of a chase after someone else's dialogue.
Yeah.
You know? So I definitely, I mean, it's a lot more work and it takes a lot more time. So it's not like, you know, the most economically sustainable process, maybe, but it's still that I feel like I can, you know, when you read something, you can kind of, you create your own vision of what it is, and you can create your own pacing of it, like your own world, basically, from when you read. And when you have an image, you're a little bit bound to, you're a little bit bound to what has already been made, you know. It's because it has a bit more of a direction, like when you already have something on screen. So I think and that's what I did for the Joker, for example, as well. Like I started working on the music just after reading the script, and then I created a lot of music that really resonated with what Todd had envisioned, like from writing a script. So he could take my kind of sense of pacing and my sense of tonality to the shooting, and they used a lot of the music that I created, like as they shot. So the pacing and the choreography and the feeling was very much in tandem with the music that we had already that I had already made too. And you know, I find it it's a much more of a dialogue when you work like that, because you can you can create more of a whole piece of art, you know,
right?
If you
going back to that day when you entered the plant in Lithuania, walk me through the safety precautions that you and your team had to take.
Yeah. Well, we had to have a health and safety person with us the whole time at every step. So, he was a really, really interesting person, and it was great to get to know him. He'd like worked for the army for a long time, and been a, you know, sniper and all these.
Wow.
He was a really interesting person to get to know. So he walked us through the procedures, basically, as you go in before we went in, and then we had to have every single cable and every single piece of equipment that we brought in had to be logged and measured, and then we ourselves had to go through all the security, and we had to change into these the same clothes as they're wearing in the series, like these white uniforms with the hat and then you have to be like measured again. You go through this like radiation like talking. It's like a talking machine that tells you if you're okay. And then as you go in there, like you can't eat or drink anything inside. So it was a very intense experience, because but it looks like it was exactly the same power plant as in the as you see in the series. So it's like these like really, really long corridors and huge, ginormous spaces. Like the it's very, like, very overwhelmingly big spaces. And so it, yeah, it made a big impact to go there for sure. And so basically for the safety precautions, you just have to, like, you know, so the health and safety person who was with us had to basically constantly be measuring us and when where we were every step of the way. And we had another person, like a guide, that had to walk us through these mazes of corridors and staircases. And and the same again. Of course, when you go out, you have to take extra precautions and measure everything extra safely. And you can't put anything on the floor or anything like that, because then, you know, there's contamination possibilities, specifically like on the floor. So you have to measure everything again as you go out, and you know, go through all these, the talking machine again tells you if you're okay.
So you had to leave some things behind, I hear.
But thankfully not too many. But we had to leave some like cables and stuff behind, because they were dangerously radiated.
Wow. So, you know, the sounds that you recorded. Now, are you actually incorporating the audio into the score, or did you recreate those sounds in the studio with an orchestra?
No, there are no instruments. So I used the actual audio that I recorded there, and I also created. There's a way to record the space, and it's called to make like an impulse response out of it. So you can basically, it's a way to kind of make a reverb, or to like access the space afterwards. So you can create this impulse, or this like audio image of a place, and then you can play sounds back into that space. So for example, my voice, which is like the human element of the score, that's the only instrument of sorts that's used in the score. Like when I recorded that, I played it back into the space. So even the elements that are human had access to the space like afterwards. So and then sounds that I took that were like actually from the space. I maybe took like snippets of almost inaudible audio and pitched it down to an audible range, and then like worked with it and processed it to make it like a musical element. And so that's how the score was created.
That's completely fascinating. So what was the biggest surprise or the biggest discovery as you were recording in the plant?
I went in there with just with completely open ears. Like I went in there without any preconceived ideas of what I wanted to record. Like I didn't go in there with the intention of playing anything back into the space, or slamming any doors or banging on anything. I really went in there just to like listen, and to like listen to what the space wanted to say or sound. And so I guess as such, like there weren't really any surprises. Like everything was just so, it was like there's so many sounds in a space like this. It's just it's like really incredible. I think the biggest kind of solo musician of the of the score was like this. There was a door that was specifically musical. it was like there was a door leading up to an engine room that was next to the pump room, and it's again exactly the same pump room as we see in the series, like these huge tanks, and as I approached this door, and there was just like a symphony of sounds happening inside this door. So for example, one of the sounds was which was again like extremely highly pitched, so I had to tune it down a lot to be able to hear it properly. But it was almost like this jazz drummer that was just, it was, you know, he was just having a go at his own like jazz solo with very like musical fill-ins and breaks, and you know, he'd do all these like triads and like da 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 da, you know, it was just, it's if you really open your ears and just go like very open-mindedly listening, you like there's all these magnificent, like, you know, almost like little characters and inside things that you start seeing, which was one of the most kind of fun, you know, fun findings of the space, I thought. And then also like in that door were like there were all these like little melodies that poked through, and like, you know, there were maybe just like a half a second or a second, like, you know, there was that I again like pitched down and then stretched out to work with, and that became like a part of one of the bigger like kind of allergies in the hospital, for example, was inspired by like some of those melodic movements that this door was singing.
This is such a completely original and unique way to score a piece. It's just really brilliant. Congratulations on that, and congratulations, of course, I forgot to mention, on the Emmy nomination. But it's really tremendous, the work that you did here. And I was listening to the score last night, and you know, it's just it's you know, of course I loved the series, but you know, when you, I had not entertained the score independently, and it's just, you know, such a, it stands alone so completely. It's really amazing and unique that it does that. So congratulations on that. I loved it.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
So one last question for you. What can you tell me about your approach for The Joker? Because that's a big title that's coming up this fall. I think it's premiering in Venice. What can you tell me about your sonic approach for that?
Yeah, exactly. Well, that again is more, like a lot of people ask me, like, well, so what, did you go and record like a mental hospital?
I was wondering that.
Yeah, exactly. But I think it's important to not get stuck in, like, you know, in any one type of method for, you know, for all stories, you know. So I think it's, you know, I'm probably not going to, it doesn't always have to be like site-specific score for each project. And I think it's, so it's important to just approach a project for what, like, I feel like that story needs to be told. And of course, for me at least, there's I look at it from a bit of a different angle when you're telling a fictional story and when you're like telling a real story that is very like site specific and based to a location. I think that was really clear to me that, you know, those two approaches were very different. And the Joker, of course, he's like, you know, he is one of my favorite fictional characters of all time, really. He's so like multi-dimensional and so diverse, and he's like a, you know, larger than life fictional character. So it was really, really amazing to be a part of telling his origin story, but I definitely approached that from a more like fictional point of view. So it's in a sense maybe a more like traditional traditional score, in the sense that there's an orchestra and there's, you know, musicians and you know, there are themes but it was again like really, really fantastic project to be a part of, because again, like, you know, there was so much heart poured into this project as well, because I think it's you know, the Joker is a character that, that people really have a lot of opinions about. And so and his origin story has never been told on screen, and there's no one official origin story. So it was a very, it was a really fun, but also like a bit of a scary task to, you know, to take on, because he's just such a strong character. But I had a lot of fun working on that project.
Was it more scary than going into a radioactive power plant?
Well, good question. I mean, I think the comic fans seem to be like a very dedicated crowd. So yeah. I hope we don't get bombed after our version of this story, because it's maybe not exactly what people are expecting. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see the reaction. But in any case, I think I tried to approach it with a lot of respect as well for the character and the place that he holds in people's hearts.
Excellent. Well, I'm looking forward to that as well. Well, I think that's all the questions I had for you today. Thank you so much for talking to me. And again, best of luck. And actually, one last question. Could you pronounce your last name for me?
Yeah, the D in my last... Well, I think the best name to approach... like pronouncing my name is or my last name is to cut it in two, because dóttir means daughter. Mm-hmm. So I'm the daughter of Guðni, who's my father. So it's Guðnadóttir.
Guðnadóttir.
Yes, very
okay.
good.
Okay. All right. Thank you. I wanted to make sure I got that right, because it just, you know, I don't have familiarity with pronouncing Icelandic names. So.
Tricky.
Well, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Best of luck to you. Have a great day.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye. Bye.